Hello. On this podcast, we talk about movies, their faults, their flaws, and their plots. So, expect some spoilers.
You've been warned.
Welcome to Plot Spackle.
I'm John, and my riddle is that you have to cross a river, and you have a boat, a hound, a chicken, and a bag of corn, and you can only take two things at a time with you. How do you get across?
I'm Eric, and well, my riddle is what book read when one is blue turns old before it is new and can be cooked in a spider stew?
I'm Richard, and my riddle is only one color, but not one size, stuck at the bottom, but easily flies.
A potato.
Good try.
That is an answer to both your things.
True. I'm going to say it's true.
Nope.
Oh, false then. I'm going to say it's false.
It's not a yes or no answer.
If this is a computer
John was
file.
Actually closer with the potato.
A turnip?
No.
Is it a carrot?
No.
Then I'm going back to potato. What was the riddle again?
Only one color, but not one size. Stuck at the bottom, yet easily flies.
Yeah, that's a potato.
In a spud launcher.
Yeah. It's white all the way through. Potatoes grow, change shape.
Except potatoes have a different color on the outside from the inside.
Some do.
Yeah, but that's the skin of the potato. It's different than the potato.
Mm-hmm.
Are you judging things on their skin color, Richard?
Look, I have...
It would
taken
be thematically
a potato.
Appropriate for this particular film.
But
normally that's your job.
That's I will true. Peel the potato. So it is a peeled potato is the answer. Because that's white all the way through. They come in different sizes. They stick on the bottom because they are affected by gravity, but you can pick up and throw a potato.
Mm.
And it flies well.
Or you go with the shadow. Yeah. Sorry, you lose, the bomb goes off, everyone dies.
The shadow? Shadows aren't stuck to the bottom. They go up walls.
It easily flies.
There's no flying shadows. They go up walls. It's different from flying.
Ask Peter Pan.
Who wrote this riddle?
Somebody who wants to have bombs go off, John.
Why are we going to have bombs go off?
Oh, well, first, before we deal with these bombs, we got to fill these plot holes.
Plot holes. Somebody's got to put plot holes in.
So, yeah, let's fill these plot holes. What are we doing them with?
I think we should fill it up with, I don't know, maybe some fruit syrup?
Got a dump truck full of scrap metal.
That's good enough to fill these plot holes as we talk about Die Hard 3 with a Vengeance. I don't think the 3 is actually part of the title, but it is Die Hard 3. It is the third Die Hard.
It's Die Hard with a Vengeance is the official title.
So, Eric... Does this movie have a plot?
It in fact does have a plot. So, Die Hard with a Vengeance starts us out in New York. New York City.
The Big Apple?
The Big Apple. I think it's in the 1990s or whatever. Anyways, it's the summertime. And everyone's going about their day and all of a sudden a bomb goes off. It's a small bomb at the time, but man, is it causing chaos. Well, it turns out that the person who set the bomb has a very specific request. He wants the police to know that there are, in fact, more bombs, but only one person is going to be able to stop them from going off. That is a Mr. John McClane, who unfortunately is suspended and has a headache because he spent all the previous night drinking. Anyways, this, I guess, Mr. Beast challenge for... John McClane is to go stand in the middle of Harlem with a very racially insensitive A-frame placard on his chest. And, well, I guess it's, I guess I'd almost want to, instead of Mr. A or Mr. Beast games, it'd be more like Squid Games. He needs to see how long he can survive in Harlem wearing let me emphasize, a racially insensitive.
Racially sign. Charged?
Sure. Anyways, John McClane is saved by Samuel L. Jackson's character named Zeus. And during this time, they have to solve this this bomb maker's challenges. We find out later that this bomb maker is named Simon, but that's just kind of a pseudonym. He is actually related to the late Hans Gruber. He's in fact his brother, bent on getting revenge, and maybe a gold heist as well. In fact, he's kind of like, ah, screw my brother, he was a jerk. But New York happens to have a more gold in it than Fort Knox, and we're going to take it. And take it they do, until John McClane and Zeus figure out the plan and take it back from him. And, well, killing Simon in the process. And then everyone is happy. John McClane finally gets aspirin for his headache, and the gold is recovered, I guess. So, yeah, that's Die Hard 3.
All right. Is that a fact?
Yes.
I don't know if that's a fact.
It's not a fact, because it's Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Fine. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
The third Die Hard movie.
The third in the trilogy.
Didn't say Simon Says.
That's true.
Ooh. All right. Well, Simon Says, Richard, give us some real facts.
Okay. So the film was released on May 19th, 1995, had an estimated budget of $90 million, ended up grossing $100 million in the U.S. and Canada, and then $366 million worldwide.
Not bad. Not bad.
Not bad. The original script for the film was called Simon Says and was written as a sequel to Lethal Weapon. But the person who wrote it couldn't sell the script to them, and then ended up selling it to the people for the Die Hard franchise. And in one of the commentaries on the DVD, he stated that the first hour of the film is the original script for the Simon Says film, basically word for word, with the names of characters changed.
Okay.
So I assume just Zeus would have been Danny Glover's character.
And, yeah, I think that's the big change.
Zeus would have been a girl.
Isn't Lethal Weapon with, what's his name?
Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
So I would assume they kept it going. I've only seen the first Lethal Weapon.
But... Yeah, well, again, it was the original intent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because Danny Glover was just too old for this.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
According to the first movie, even though he's only like...
He's always too old for this. He's in four, like three other movies. I swear they just keep going.
Mm-hmm. He was only like 40 as well. Anyways, we're not talking about Lethal Weapon. Let's talk about Die Hard.
I'm sure it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. It's a Christmas movie after all.
Sure.
Is Lethal Weapon a Christmas movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
You heard it here.
Well, no, that's at like some point. That's like the big debate is, you know, which is a better Christmas movie, Die Hard or Lethal Weapon? It's Die Hard because that's an actual Christmas movie. Lethal Weapon just happens to take place at Christmas.
Okay.
All right. The person who wrote the script, Jonathan Hensley, was detained by the FBI after completing the script.
Because it was too good of a plan?
Because it involved extensive information about the Federal Gold Reserve in downtown Manhattan. There were, like, they had to talk to him about how he knew about the, it being near a subway spur, all of the different, like, the general layout within it.
It's like, I looked at a map, guys.
Part of it, it was the, like, he was like, hey, I'm doing research for a film. Can I get some information about your place?
Oh.
And they were like, oh, sure, here it is. And then the tunnel that they drive all the trucks through, he read about in a New York Times article. Samuel Jackson said that Zeus is the closest character to his personality of anybody that he played. The racially charged sandwich board was blank during filming so as to not get anyone in trouble, and the words were added with CGI later.
Because then they get changed for, like, TV?
The TV release, yep. Instead of the really racially charged one, it just said I hate everyone for the TV release.
That doesn't seem like as Like
it does make it feel like a bit of an overreaction on other characters' parts.
Because I'd assume if people said, oh, I hate everyone, a lot of people are like, yeah, me too. I do hate everyone.
And much like in the original Die Hard, a lot of the German in here doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It's fake German.
It's fake German.
Can't even get real German. We got German at home, they said.
I think it's more of like...
Sweener Schnitzel.
I think it's just more of... That's Die Hard's...
brand.
That's their brand.
That's their brand. Except for when it gets released in Germany, then all of the people... When they got to re-record all of the lines, all of the German people actually make sense because they changed it.
Shouldn't they make them like Austrian instead?
And then they came with an actual East German accent.
Mm.
Like, you gotta localize it in Germany, give everyone like German language, and then make the bad guys Austrian.
Maybe, I don't know.
Who knows?
And then it's this German still doesn't make sense.
Given the how close it was to the release of the film, it was right after the Oklahoma City bombings.
Poor timing.
There was a lot of consideration over whether or not to cut out a bunch of the explosions. It was not done, but during an interview right before the release of the film, Bruce Willis started with, I'm not going to answer any questions about the bombing. I had nothing to do with it, and anything I say will trivialize the tragedy that occurred.
This is fiction we're talking about here. Don't bring in real life stuff.
Don't make this about that. Don't make it worse.
If anything, I wish there was more explosions in my movie.
I mean, that's kind of, I think, too far.
Oh.
I think he had a measured response.
I mean, that is a good PR, our response, because movies are escapism.
The filmmakers did actually pull the pickup truck off the bridge with a boat. So, you know.
I mean, they're like, what's the best way to film this gun off? And the guy's like, well, I think the best and cheapest way to actually do it is just yank it off.
Yeah. I mean, sure.
And Jonathan Hensley lived right above one of the scenes that was shot on the Upper West Side. And he specifically put it in the script so that he could watch the filming from his apartment. Because.
Convenience.
Why not?
I mean, you're the script writer. You get to say what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it also means that he has a good idea of the actual layout physically well. Makes it easier to write a scene.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Those are some fun facts.
Those are great facts.
That's excellent. So I think Simon says it's time to go hit the plot holes.
All right. We are getting our plot holes from... I guess Simon says IMDb and movies mistakes.
I didn't find any movie mistakes.
Simon didn't say movie mistakes. He said IMDb.
But you didn't separate the sentences.
I tried to. There was a hidden colon in there.
Oh, there's the hidden colon.
Like, if you read it, it would have made sense. When this gets released, I'll put subtitles in.
Subtitles on our audio format?
Yeah. It's amazing what they can do with technology nowadays.
It's called a transcript, I think.
Oh, crap. Yeah. and I can start off.
All right.
A drive from New York City to the Quebec border takes about 5.5 hours, probably slightly more if driving a truck. Even if Simon's henchmen did have a head start, they would still be somewhere in New York State by the time McClane figures out their destination. That would have given American authorities plenty of time to intercept the trucks along the way inside their own borders. Moreover, even if the trucks would have had the time to make it to the Canadian border, they would have been caught by customs with a very suspicious cargo of bulk gold bars.
Well, they had the right paperwork.
Yeah. And wasn't the gold hidden as well?
Well, I mean...
Okay, it's in the containers.
It's in the containers, but I'd say that they at the very least had to have proper information regarding stuff like weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's still going to be a checking.
I'd also, couldn't they have just have bribed one of the customs agents?
Like, that's also, I mean, they are carting around several billion dollars of gold. An extra bribe here or there is not going to break their budget.
Well, it's part of like the operating costs.
Yeah.
You know, okay, let's have, I don't know, $1 million for a bribe, but that seems like, I assume that's a good bribe amount.
But going off of like these times, I mean, so it's 5.5 hours from New York to Quebec, right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
This isn't also 5.5 hours then for John McClane to get to the border from New York?
I guess they could fly.
He had a helicopter.
But yeah, but he had a helicopter, but they also had support from local authorities, I guess. Mm-hmm. But also, what? So they finished the heist itself, stealing the gold bars, at like before 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Because the train crash happens at or the explosion.
The boat explosion.
Well, no, because at 9:20 in the morning is when they had to be at the stop, right?
For the subway.
For the subway, which is when the explosion happens. Mm-hmm. Then it gets them moving off somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
and they're all busy trying to prevent
the school bombing.
School bombing. The school bombing is supposed to happen at what, 3?
Mm-hmm. I think it's 3, yeah.
So we already have our, like, 5 hours time, so... Mm-hmm. Like, and the whole point of the plot is that it's a huge shell game.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know exactly at which point we swapped out the gold bars for the
scrap metal.
Well, enough to be loaded onto the barge.
So that could have happened before or after they went into the tunnel.
I'd assume it'd be before because everyone thinks that the gold bars are on the barge. I guess second in command,
the actual terrorist?
The actual terrorist is like, comes in, is like, what's that up with this? And that's when he gets shot by his femme fatale.
So I'm assuming that they were being, because I think they're actually in cargo containers trying to get across the border.
Mm-hmm.
And so the swap probably happened right after. Like, they fill up a dump truck, dump truck would leave, and they would swap out
the contents.
Because, and then the second command is completely clueless because he's down in the tunnels, like watching over, and he goes down the subway tunnel where the others are going to go their different path. And if they're on containers, they could have loaded that up onto a train.
A train, or I mean, even semis, or
yeah, they have,
or lots, another boat.
It's, they have different ways to move it. In fact, the other boat makes a lot of sense because one of the first riddles was like the pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
And the colors matched the boat that did explode.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a shell game in a way. I think we missed half of the behind the scenes stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's kind of the point. It's like, oh, you didn't know the whole story. You don't find that out until near the end.
And plus, look, I mean, John, it's different for you because you're in actual logistics, but how hard or how easy is it to lose track of a container unless you have the specific container number?
Well,
I'd assume it'd be pretty hard, like the colors, whatever, but.
Well, yeah, because you're going off the codes.
Yeah. So could it not have been easy to switch the whatever codes they're supposed to be like?
Well, generally the code they'd be looking for is stuff like that spray painted on.
Well, I mean, so Simon is going to give the second in command guy the wrong codes. He's just going to have the scrap metal.
Yeah, he's going to give the. Because he's going off of, they're going to know about weight,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to care about paperwork and any official point they have to cross.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as long as all that stuff lines up, nobody really cares. If you say you're transporting 10 tons of gold, and they open it and it's 10 tons of gold, there's no complaint there.
Okay.
If you say you're transporting gold and it's scrap metal, then they'll check.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're like, well, something's up, and they'll push you aside. But, like, it's all about paperwork, and so it's either forged or is actually planned for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, stealing the gold, though, is a good idea. Gold is very changeable. Easy to launder because it doesn't have to stay as a gold bar.
Mm-hmm.
It does not.
But, yeah, I think the time also, we have plenty of time. They don't run into them until late
midnight, isn't it?
Yeah, and like I was saying, before the boat explodes, the gold could already have been
on its way for several hours.
Yeah. So
because the whole point of the boat was to get John McClane to keep following them,
and also to be the, oh, we had the gold but it exploded. Though I mean, dropping it to the bottom of the river, not a good way to destroy gold.
I mean, gold is pretty durable.
It is durable. They know exactly where the crash is. I mean, there's people who spend a lot of time looking for gold in shipwrecks because the gold's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that explosion is pretty big. It's not enough to absolutely destroy the gold. Most of the gold would survive.
I mean, couldn't you just dredge the bottom of the...
Yeah, that's what they're just going to have to dredge.
They're going to have to dredge it, but...
And it will be expensive.
If they dredge it and then there's no gold there...
Eventually, they'll figure out something's up.
They'll figure out something's up, but it'll be a while because people are going to be dredging and go like, oh, maybe it sank further than we thought because it destroyed the
Oh, and they're going to have to worry about with like people trying to wildcat dredge and dive.
I mean, I would.
And as long as you can swim up to the surface holding like 27 pounds, that gets you a gold bar.
Well, I wouldn't swim up with it. If I was dredging on my own, I'd probably take like balloons with me and an spare oxygen tank and try and like float them up.
Or at least, but still, just like random civilians.
Yeah.
Like you'll get random civilians trying to go after the gold yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know like with diving, every extra pound like multiplies to bring up. So it's not that easy, but there's still people be doing stuff like someone down at the bottom, putting it into your bucket that's connected to your winch on your truck.
Yeah, so once like you have a pilot ship,
Balls underneath a tarp.
Yeah. Coming down at night and like trying to dive for gold. Anyways, I think we've answered this.
Like, yeah, I think so too.
I think because they weren't paying too close attention to what's going on in the story to realize that they got bamboozled. Which is the whole point of the plot, is to bamboozle everyone.
All right. So the second one is Ricky Walsh is present during the meeting in the van with the FBI, sitting in the front passenger seat, and would have had a clear, unobstructed view of the pictures of Peter Gruber and Matthias Targo in the FBI folder. So he could have easily identified Peter Gruber when he introduced himself as Bob Thompson from the city engineer's office. He also takes a good glance at Matthias Targo when he jumps on one of the trucks, so he could have easily identified him as well.
I mean, he could have, if he paid close attention to the grainy photos.
Peter Gruber was wearing sunglasses, though, right?
He was.
Oh, yeah, two totally different people.
Exactly.
Well,
it's the Superman defense.
The other thing, though, is that, like, as a person who wears glasses, different shapes of glasses will change your face shape. It will make people assume different things about the way your face looks.
Yeah, Superman effect. It's the glasses.
So you have that. You have somebody who's like, okay, he has this color eyes. I don't know if he's got that color eyes. And he was checking out the briefcase because he's hearing about a bunch of bombs. So he was worried about the bomb. And then, oh, wait a second, the alarm's turned off, I guess it's time to go, and then he gets killed later, so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also a bit of the audacity. Like, would you expect to just run into someone that the FBI talked to you, pretending to be someone else, like, later that day?
Mm-hmm.
Would you even think that that's what's going on? Be like, this guy looks suspiciously like Simon Gruber, but he doesn't have a German accent, doesn't have a stutter.
I mean, people can look like other people.
And he doesn't have sunglasses on.
That's true. And plus, isn't he going off a black and white photo as well? Like,
he's going a black and white photo that isn't front. You don't have a front view and a side view. You just have a like 3/4 angle.
And I'd assume it's somewhat grainy as well.
At a distance, because it's not a glamour shot. It's not part of his portfolio.
It's we had some guy that could take this picture from like 300 yards away.
He had a really extended, telephoto?
Telescoping lens.
Yeah. And that's how he got the photo. So yeah, they could recognize him if they had an analyst there. Or like had the picture on hand to be like, look up, look down.
Mm-hmm.
FBI's most wanted list or whatever.
Yeah, something or to refresh.
All news bulletin, fax it, because this is the 90s, people fax. I mean, I guess people still fax, but besides the point.
Send it on your pager.
Just be like, hey, keep an eye out for this guy. So yeah, not a real plot hole.
Yeah, just, you know, character has an oversight, easily explained.
Mm-hmm. And he gets killed afterwards, so maybe he did, but he got killed before he can
all right
answer.
So, there is no reason for the NYPD to let Zeus join the raid on Simon's hideout in Canada. He's a civilian, he's wounded, and Simon doesn't have another bomb to threaten him into getting involved.
I mean, that is true.
But perks?
But he was helping McLean. Like, who knows? Maybe there is one more thing that they need to follow along with Simon's plan or whatever.
But also, like, McLean and him weren't supposed to be part of the raid. They were supposed to be up in the helicopter the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were just supposed to be there to go see it happen so they could get that, oomph, we got him. They were both involved, and this, you know, let him in. Mm. He went through a lot.
I mean, McLean's a loose cannon, but darn it, he gets results. I mean, that is why he was on suspension, I'm pretty sure.
Because he's a loose cannon. But he gets results. And he was 2 steps
from being a functioning alcoholic.
One step. But yeah, I think it was like he was there the whole time. He went through all this stuff. He got shot.
Let's see it to its conclusion.
Yeah, let him be there. He'll be safe. He's in a helicopter. Mm-hmm. It's not like the enemy's going to have the helicopter with the machine gun in
fair,
it.
Mm-hmm. I can address one thing about this plot hole right now. Given that we've moved up to the border with Canada, the NYPD has zero say over how this operation goes.
Oh, okay.
This is solidly the FBI at this point. As soon as we're outside of New York City.
Okay. Mm. And what about the Mounties? We didn't see the Mounties coming in. I wanted guys on horses with red suits.
I was going to say there's no snow outside, so they're not coming in on their snowmobiles.
Yeah, Shokes come running through the warehouse, being polite as they arrest them.
Sorry.
But yeah, so sure, there's no reason to let Zeus join the raid, but the NYPD doesn't have a say.
NYPD does not have a say. It was FBI.
And given that we know the general attitude of the FBI from Die Hard 1, which is, let's do this.
Oh, yeah. Civilian like casualties Saigon. Are allowable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can imagine the FBI, as described in the Die Hard movies, is totally willing to keep Simon around.
And they're just like, you know what?
Or keep Zeus around.
You want to come with us on the helicopter ride? Let's go.
It's just like Saigon, eh?
I was 5.
Okay, well, enough of that, because mid, real, as the youths like to say.
It's a mid-plot hole.
Mid-plot hole. Okay, to go to another mid-plot hole, not one character who knows or comes to know of the Federal Reserve heist either remembers, cares, or thinks it important enough to mention that $13 billion of the stolen gold is laying in the aqueduct following the dam explosion. All anyone seems concerned with is dredging the non-existent bullion from the bottom of Long Island South. I'm going to answer it. Just because something's not talked about doesn't mean it was talked about off camera. And we have how many hours?
The post cleanup investigation is going to take a while. There's not much talk about, you know, cleaning up all the bulldozers in the bottom of the reserve. Mm.
And has John McLean even submitted his incident report as well?
Yeah, he's got paperwork ahead.
Plus, who says there's $13 billion in gold in there?
Didn't Zeus take one of them out of the...
He got one gold bar.
Yeah, he got
true. One.
He got a gold bar.
So there's probably some gold bars enough to cover the scrap metal.
There's enough to cover the scrap metal to make sure that when the terrorist checks, he thinks there's gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's gold. That much gold is very heavy. It's still in the aqueduct. It's going to get cleaned up. It's a whole process. It's not like they can just go dredge it because... The aqueduct was mid construction,
and when they flood it,
it's mud.
You have to deal with the dam being exploded. You have to deal with the aqueduct itself. You have to deal with a lot more than just we're going to go clean up this one truck.
Yeah, it's going to be a process. They'll get to it eventually. This is a like months later kind of solution to the problem. They have time. One truck is not make or break it. It's just not as important to the story at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That truck got washed down the aqueduct. So it's at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's somewhere in the middle. They'll get to it, all right? There's far more important things to do right now, like prevent a school from exploding, hunting down the rest of the gold. Mm-hmm.
So, then we have Officer McLean finds the subway bomb in the first car, the front of the train, and then proceeds to walk to the last car at the back of the train prior to detonation. We see the signal is set to detonate the bomb when the first wheels roll over the trigger. Simon's plan appears to be fairly precise, so it's reasonable that he would have planned the bomb to be in the first car when it exploded, i.e. at that location on the track, and since McLean had moved the bomb at least several hundred feet, the bomb is no longer in the planned location and could have spoiled the plan.
I don't think it's several hundred. It might be like 100 feet.
I guess it depends how long New York subway cars are, but...
But I also point out...
Is it the plan just to explode the subway?
Yeah, the point is just to explode the subway close enough to the reserve that causes them to turn off the alarm.
Mm-hmm. It is to have an explosion that sets off seismic triggers. That's literally the plan, and if it happens anywhere in that subway station, it's close enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very... high allowance of where the explosion can be at this location.
Mm-hmm.
He just need the explosion, which is why the plan was always for it to go off.
Because he didn't expect them to make it to the location at all in general. Hence, make it through downtown traffic with using only civilian transportation to get there.
And had they made it, they would have exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Problem solved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also because the plan was put into place before Zeus was involved. Mm-hmm. So that was the real stick in the mud. It was, there was no way they were going to get on the train to stop it. Then it would be, oh, because he broke the rules.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it exploded. And so the fact that they were able to stop it at all. But yeah, the explosion was close enough. There's a certain level of
it was
close enough is good enough.
It wasn't a shaped charge to get into the vault or anything like that.
No, it was just to get the alarm off.
Mm-hmm. It was just to have a lot of shaking and loud noises at that location.
Yeah, they're still going through a different wall that's picked specifically for this.
Mm-hmm. He already blew up the entrance to get down into the department store anyway. That's been going for a full hour at least.
Yeah. The plan is working just fine. The 100 feet don't matter as long as it's that train station. If it'd gone off down the track,
maybe.
Or at the first stop, if someone had messed around with it by bumping it, because it was just stuck to the wall with magnets.
Yeah.
So if someone else had accidentally bumped into it and set it off, then their plan would have failed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it needed to be, you even couldn't set it off just by bumping into it.
That was the thing, because it was the mixed.
Well, yeah, but. Yeah.
But if it had gone off early.
Mm-hmm.
There's a limit. All mechanical actions have failure points before that.
Mm-hmm. But it was more likely that another train was going to be going over the activation switch.
Yeah, there's other ways it could have messed it up.
But besides, I'm going to be pedantic.
Yeah, but it, means I'm as right. long as the explosion happens near this subway station.
Yeah, whomever wrote this plot hole wasn't paying isn't seeing the forest from the trees.
They got bamboozled.
It's a shell game. Simon does it again.
It's not like they sat down and specifically explained the plot to you.
Mm.
There's still some inference you have to go on your own.
Mm.
But that's all the plot holes listed on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have one.
Ooh, what's your plot hole,
John? Actually, two. So first plot hole, the desk in the police office doesn't explode because they mix the two polymers on the surface of the desk. Then as far as I can tell, all it takes is some sort of high energy, any sort of impact or energy added to the solution after that point to explode.
Maybe it was neutralized. Maybe they threw some baking soda on it.
When?
I don't know.
Because he pours the one polymer on it, then he gets the tip, and he gets a bit of the other one, and he mixes it on the desk.
Mm-hmm.
and then throws the stick and explodes when it hits the wastebasket.
Right. Yep.
But there still would have been a mixture on the desk.
They were just careful when they wiped it down.
Yeah. They threw some rubbing alcohol in there. They
added a different solution that denatures it.
Yeah.
The other solution powdered sugar from donuts?
Ooh.
And it's just so permeated into the surface of the desk.
Or maybe there's just the oil you use to rub down your desks, to keep them nice.
Some nice linseed.
Mm-hmm. Linseed is the counter to the explosion the whole time.
It could be.
They should have been paying attention. Why didn't your desk explode? I always wipe it down. Keep my desk clean, McLean, like you should. Keeps you organized. Linseed oil. Mike pulls it out. This should have been the solution the whole time. They douse themselves with linseed oil at the end, and that's how they survive the explosion.
I don't think that's how that works. But given the rest of this film, I can't say that it's entirely wrong.
It's an oil, so the explosion is just going to slide right off of them.
Yeah, like water off a duck's back.
Yeah. And ducks love water.
But ducks don't like explosions.
Well, yeah, because they're not linseed oil covered ducks.
They're duck covered ducks.
They're just ducks. If you dipped them in linseed oil,
then their explosion
resistance is specifically with these polymers of explosion. C4 still works on ducks.
Is that why John McClane is always so shiny? He doesn't sweat. He just secretes linseed oil.
Or that's what he uses as a lotion. Mm-hmm.
If it's good enough for a desk, it's good enough for John McClane.
That's why his desk is so cluttered and not shiny, is he uses all of his police allotment of linseed oil on himself.
Well, yeah. See, one time he was at a wood shop or something, getting some, and the guy was man, my hands are always dry. And the guy who works there was like, you know what I use?
Here's what you need. Linseed for your hands.
Linseed for your hands. Works wonders.
So I'm just going
to
bring
up, like he talked to that guy on the airplane about curling your feet into toes or into fists.
Fists with your toes.
And it always works. He just listens to people. It changes his life, maybe for good, maybe for bad.
I'm just going to say, in Nakatomi Plaza, he had trouble getting through the air vents. I think linseed oil is going to solve that issue now, because he didn't have trouble getting through any of the vents in this movie.
Afterwards, he went and talked to the Alcatraz Grease Man.
Yeah.
The Alcatraz Grease Man's like, what you need, linseed oil.
I have a question for you, Johnny. I don't know nothing. Hands him a $5 bill. What do you need?
Yeah.
And that's stealing that from Police Squad. But
yeah. So the other plot hole I have, the last car of the subway gets flipped onto the track, off the track and onto the platform and swings across. Mm-hmm. Aren't the subway trains down the tracks itself like 4 feet? What kind of force would allow it to be blown up onto the platform to slide across and also not kill John McClane? Keep the train car itself mostly intact instead of being half and a burning wreck.
Yeah, the percussive force and whatnot. Well, to be fair, John McClane is able to hold himself against the entire force of a dam full of water. When he's hanging on that grate.
Or is that the linseed oil?
It could be the linseed oil, water off of a duck's back and explosions. So
he eats a spinach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Forearm strength like a bear.
Yeah.
But for the train, it is lower. I don't know if it's 4 feet.
I know it's low enough that it's a pain to get out of if you fall in. That's why I'm going at 4 feet. I haven't looked at it. I don't know if Richard's trying to research that at the moment or...
But yeah, it is enough to...
How deep is the platform down to the rails itself in a subway?
Oh, no, I was not looking at that.
Oh, were you looking at linseed oil?
No.
To be fair, teak oil is peak.
Essential minerals.
I was looking at how many ounces of gold it takes to be 13 billion in 1995 prices.
Oh.
It's got a lot.
It was $400 or something in that time. But going back, I'm going to say because the bomb was designed to make it more like an earth, like a seismic bomb. It just ended up flipping the, it's kind of like when you do the tablecloth and pulling the tablecloth trick.
Here we go. A subway track is typically 3 to 3.5 feet
okay.
lower than the platform.
Okay, so that's a little bit less.
And then think of how heavy that train car is. That's multi-ton.
Mm-hmm. Multi-ton, but the bomb was designed to be a seismic bomb, not an explodey bomb.
It didn't make that bomb sound.
Well,
sonic bombs from Star Wars.
That's
That's what sonic bombs sound like.
That is true. I'm just thinking that because it was designed to be a seismic bomb, kind of created the wave and the tracks and flipped the car off, the subway car off the tracks and then onto its side.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a wave generator.
So the whole train did a wave thing.
But that one, because it's closest, it had the most impact, and that's why it flipped onto its side.
And they could just swing across.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely how subway trains work.
I think it was treated with linseed oil too.
Yeah. I mean, how do you keep your subway so nice and clean?
Well, specifically that car though.
Yeah.
It was an older car with some wood paneling.
Mm-hmm. Got to keep it nice.
Yeah.
Or teak oil. That's another one you can use for wood. I guess that's more for waterproofing, which you might have to do for a subway car because it's sometimes exposed to the elements. Linseed oil, I think, is more for internal stuff.
So there was a guy, maybe, he was carrying all his linseed oil and he left it in a bag and he was sitting in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got just spilled with the explosion.
The Grease Man of Rikers.
The Grease Man of Rikers. He escaped. He lives in the subway tunnels.
It's a brotherhood.
He's a good man, though. He wants to grease up all the trains to keep them safe from explosions.
Exactly.
All right. Well, every problem can be solved with the right kind of oil.
Yeah. And, you know, the right grease man.
And the right grease man. Speak to your local grease man. Well, so those are the potholes.
All right. Should we talk about the movie, guys?
We should talk about the movie.
Have you guys seen this movie before?
I've seen clips of it. I have not actually seen the movie.
How about you, Richard? Had you seen this movie before?
No.
So I have seen this movie before. And what's your opinion on it?
So
we were discussing this earlier.
Like, as a diehard movie goes, it's more diehard than Mission Impossible 3 was Mission Impossible. Mm-hmm. But there are also some key differences.
I agree with you. John McClane definitely is starting to become more of a superhero than man.
This is the point where we start to have a lot less pushing over that boundary of, oh, you could survive that maybe
mm-hmm.
to where it's because they really sell that in the first two movies is mm-hmm. that there's a lot of things that would hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely you are going to be in pain.
Mm-hmm.
But you could imagine someone surviving that or pulling that off. This one, I think the explosion's the first big one, but then the water and the aqueduct,
there's no way he's holding on.
Yeah. The force that would also throw him up into the air.
Let's say it's
coming down again. That's not good.
It's strong enough to push a dump truck and
a dump truck filled with either several tons of scrap metal or several tons of gold, whichever it is at this point.
Maybe it's a decoy. Anyways, besides
but
the
those,
point.
But those are very heavy vehicles.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
The minimum probably 25 tons.
I think the truck is 10, but I think they can hold 400.
Yeah.
400 to 800 tons.
They are very heavy.
So.
And it pushes that, but he's okay. Makes the explosion. There's a lot more. Okay, this is a little pushing it for action.
I'm just going to say he was at he's at the outside edge of all the water coming through. Maybe that's how he survived. I still agree with you that you probably aren't holding on with just your fingers, your flesh digits.
And also Die Hard with a Vengeance has a slightly different tone than the previous two. Mm. The first two have a very similar cinematography. Mm. Music and writing,
I mean, this is almost more like a Lethal Weapon movie.
Yeah, maybe it is more like a Lethal Weapon. I think that's another big thing.
That's what Richard said, so.
Yeah, another big thing is that this movie, there is no, like, conflict with the rest of your law enforcement like there is in the previous two, where there's always, like, someone undercutting you.
You know, you got the FBI going by the FBI, the terrorist playbook.
Yeah. And on the other hand, like, it's still an enjoyable movie because, like, Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson together play well together. They have a lot of good on-screen chemistry. It's fun to watch them. And the plot is, that's a diehard, like, villain. A thief pretending to be a terrorist with a complicated plot that almost works.
Until the hubris gets them?
Yeah, until hubris gets them. But it is, oh, this makes sense. The reason it's a very convoluted plot is because they're trying to do something very, very difficult.
And they have to get themselves the most advantage, which is why, hey, you have to run from one side of the city to the other.
Yeah, it's just keeping them busy. But I think, yeah, that's my point, is I think trying to place it is not as good as the first one.
No, of course.
But was not expecting that. I've heard that it was better than the second one. And I'm like, well, I might give it a slight edge.
See, I would go with it's definitely better for the plot and plot and villain, but it's less so for the technical aspects of the film itself.
Okay.
So the second one, I liked a lot of what they did for the, like you said, with the film, with the cinematography and everything. That one I think was better for what they did with it than the third one, but the third one felt more diehardy
with other key points of the plot. Other stuff. Yeah, the villains are better in three than they are in two. It's still not great, and I think the escalation, because we go from holding a building hostage, to holding an airport hostage, to holding a city hostage. And at that point, it's like, are you really a hostage?
I mean, it's not like you couldn't just leave.
Well, like, and that's the thing, is that like most of the hostages didn't know anything was going on. And it wasn't even that the city was being held hostage. It was that they were using the threat of civilian lives, but nothing was involved. And then that was technically part of the plan anyway, to go, oh, we're going to put this on the thing so we can congest traffic further.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm going to bring this up because we talked about the transportation time, and he calls that in, which means that the gold has already left the city by then. Because he would not do that if they were still trying to get the gold through traffic.
True. The gold was out.
The gold was already gone.
The gold was outside of the city limits when he did the call in to say that the reason all the cops are at the schools is because of the bomb.
Yep. Like, the gold is already gone at that point.
So for that part, can I tell you guys a change I kind of wish happened?
Yeah.
I kind of wish they had brought the jerk TV reporter from the first movie. And had
him, be the conflict, one who gives the bomb report. Like, he's the one looking around. He's trying to redeem his career.
No, I'm just thinking Jeremy Irons called into his station. And he's the one. So it would have been more like a cameo.
Callback.
But I think that I kind of wish that. I don't know what his schedule was. Maybe they tried, but
I think that's what we were missing, actually, for Die Hard with a Vengeance to be as great as Die Hard. Because in the first Die Hard, it's not just that he's underarmed against superior forces in a building that they're in control of. It's also his help outside the building is being undercut by the LAPD. Oh, and then it's also being undercut by the FBI. And then
the news.
Like, there's all these stacks that keep adding in to the difficulty. Like, he is against all these forces and they're all doing their own thing. And then this one, it's just the bad guy. It is just Gruber is the only conflict he has.
Because, like, the New York Police Department is actually effective in doing their job, trying to stop bombs. The FBI is involved in trying to help.
Like, there's no additional difficulty added. Mm.
The closest thing you get would have been the gang at the very beginning, but it is not a through line that gets carried on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like they're coming after trying to get it. We don't actually see what happens to Zeus's shop, mm-hmm. which just imply that it exploded. Same as like...
Or gets ransacked.
Yeah.
And it's just like the boys at the beginning with Zeus, they're in the school.
Yeah. But that's kind of a red herring as well.
Yeah.
The school wasn't going to explode.
The school was not going to explode. The bomb was fake.
Mm-hmm. Because he's not a monster. He's not going to kill children.
Though, I don't know if there were any children, like, on the subway train and on the station or in the department store.
It is during the school day, though, so there
that saves children from between ages 5 and 18, but what about the younger than that?
What about any of the kids who were skipping school?
He doesn't care about kids who skip school.
Well, they're criminals at that point.
He is very sensible about this, that children should be in school and that they are criminals and thus not worthy of protection.
Stay in school, kids.
Stay in school or you explode.
Although I didn't...
Unless you wear enough linseed oil, just douse that up there.
I did enjoy the two scenes where they had the bomb in the park and then Zeus is like, grabs the bomb, brings it with them, and John McClane's like, what are you doing with that? Zeus like, what if a kid grabs it?
Yeah.
And then one of the henchmen later just drops it off and the other henchman's like, what if a kid grabs it?
Yeah.
I did enjoy that. That was a pretty...
That was a good callback. Yeah. Good joke.
I also liked that John McClane totally just steals the kids' bikes. Because they're like, all the cops are gone. Nobody can do anything about it.
And he's like, all right.
It's like Christmas. And he's like, taking your bike. What are you doing? It's Christmas, kid.
Yeah. Like, I enjoyed the movie overall. Mm-hmm. I'll say, I think, though, it's an 8.
Whereas Die Hard 1 is a 10. We're not going to dispute that. It is the if you're going to watch a Die Hard, watch the Die Hard. But where would you put it on, like, between 1, 2, and 3?
That is a very hard one. I haven't watched 2 in...
How many years has it been?
When did we cover it?
Like 2 years ago?
Yeah, that's when I watched 2.
That's when I watched it, too.
So...
But for me personally, I think I would put 3 above 2 just for...
I think I enjoy watching 3 more than I enjoyed watching 2. There were points where I actually laughed out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I think one was when the guy climbs into the taxi cab.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, as soon as I like see the shadow move in, I'm like, is he? And then the door opens up and he just sits in. I'm like, oh, that is funny. That's some funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like... So I'd say 3 is better than 2.
But it's nowhere close to 1.
I think maybe 2 is a 7.5 then.
Okay.
It's like I say, if 8's enjoyable enough to watch, and I would just kind of watch it again. I think I'm more likely to watch it again than
Die Hard 2.
Than 2.
I think I'd agree. Just 2. I don't want to say 2 was a schlog, but... It kind of was a slog with how many, I don't want to say false endings, but twists and turns, like,
yeah,
like in 2 where they jump the quote unquote, jump the shark. I think we talked about that where they just had the snowmobile go over the semi for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like 3 is also a little too long.
I think it was 2 hours. So
well, it's also just like,
I'm sure
the final action scene is just, it feels very tacked on.
I would agree. Yeah.
Like they should have beat.
Maybe they were at the border or whatever.
Well, it's also just as the sequence of events is like our final scene is like they get away from the bomb and they just kind of show up in one more gunfight and it ends with an exploding helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Got to hit that helicopter with the chain.
Yeah, which was just kind of like, it's not a solid sequence of events. There's a break in the action.
It's no Hans Gruber falling off the Nakatomi Plaza.
But that's the thing, is this is more like the Franz standing up again and getting shot kind of add on.
Mm-hmm.
That was a final like period to the whole movie. A final like,
because that wasn't an entire scene. Whereas that's just kind of, oh, everyone thinks they're happy. Here comes the guy who won't die, and
I think it's also ultimately because Simon Gruber won, technically. and they needed to have him loose.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Richard, how would you rate this movie?
I mean, I agree. I would put 3/2.
Okay.
But all of them are below 1, so.
Okay. We just didn't get a definitive answer from you, and I want you to feel included.
Sure. That's why I was contributing to the conversation.
All right.
I'm like, yes.
Yeah. So, a snack?
I think it's pretty bare minimum. Like, it's a popcorn flick. You can have popcorn with this. Chips, yeah, maybe.
Salty snack.
Whatever you want. Mm-hmm. I think it's engrossing enough that you're not, you
maybe not even need it.
I ate it with tortilla chips and I did not need salsa.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even like Doritos. They weren't even flavored. It was just plain old tortilla chips.
Well, to be fair, that's just delicious by itself.
It is. But, you know, I was just like, I didn't need anything more than that. I wanted something to eat while I watched the film.
I mean, I was semi-distracted while watching the film.
But you were still able to, like,
yeah,
pick
I was,
up on it. Like, the majority
I was picking
of the
up and I was enjoying it. Mm-hmm. So, if you haven't seen it.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd recommend watching it. If you enjoy the Die Hard movies, and assuming you have not seen this Die Hard movie, it's definitely the second best Die Hard.
Second best so far. Probably going to keep that title. But
well, I've seen 4, and it's definitely better.
I've seen 4 as well.
Do you think
I have not?
Oh,
here's the thing, though. I saw 4 before I saw 1.
Ooh. I didn't do that.
I think I did that as well.
What?
So I had a friend who, this is now I'm going to date myself, but this is about when Blu-rays starting coming out. And I happen to have I don't want to say high definition, but it was a 720p TV with a Blu-ray player. And he's like, hey, can I watch Die Hard 4 on this with you? I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Cause you know, you need almost the height, all the definitions. And so I watched Die Hard 4 with him before. I think I watched Die Hard.
See, I watched Die Hard at work on break because there was a DVD player attached to the TV in the break room. And so we started like bringing movies to watch. And so it would, you know, watch a bit and then like watch more on lunch and watch more on second break. So it took like 2 days, but yeah, we watched it on the TV at work.
Nice. That'd be awesome.
But you know what we need to do now?
Find the gold. Go swimming in the river.
We have our own form of gold. Something far more valuable.
Is it our patrons?
It is our patrons.
Power of friendship.
They're worth more than their weight in gold.
I don't know. Gold's pretty expensive right now.
Depends. How expensive are kidneys? Corneas?
Well, that's true.
I mean, that's not how I was thinking of their value, but I'm guess that you could calculate it using that way.
Listen, I just wanted to make sure that they're worth more than their weight in gold.
I think they're worth more than the sum of their parts. Synergy.
I think that their kidneys are more valuable mint in package.
Oh, you're one of those collector people. What good is it if you're not going to use them?
Thank you, patrons.
Yes, thank you so much, patrons. And technically, they are being used, Richard. That's the thing.
Then I guess they're not mint anymore,
they're not
are
mint
they?
In package. They're used kidneys. I was trying to protect them from this incredibly morbid sense of value.
Listen, it's like a car. You drive it off a lot. It loses its value like half right
then. I still think that they're valuable.
I do too.
Well, I think they're valuable too. What if we need spare kidneys?
Anyways.
Everyone has two.
If you liked the episode... Everyone. Leave a like on Facebook and a comment. Do you think linseed oil is the best way to get rid of explosions? Or do you prefer something more like mineral oil or like, what's another good one? I'm blank for oils in my head right now. It's all filled with linseed.
It's fish oil.
Fish oil, cod oil.
Cod liver oil, huh?
Yep. That'll protect you from all the explosions.
This is completely off topic, but did it ever seem like cod liver oil was like a major, like had way more part in our lives? Like, I know it's from old TV shows, like from the
40s. Well, yeah, those are the things that you had to worry about was your Bermuda Triangle.
It's quicksand. Don't forget
quicksand. And not having enough cod liver oil.
Being pressured into drugs.
That's true.
Yeah. Which you were going to get for free.
Yeah. Because apparently that's a sustainable business model. Anyways, besides the point, if you would like to let us talk to us on Twitter, contact us at PlotSpacklePod and let us know. Same question as John, do you prefer the more natural oil as like linseed oil, or are you more of a teak fan? I personally prefer teak oil for my buffing needs, but let me know. I guess this is getting more into wood carving Twitter.
Or you can let us know, plotspacklepodcast@gmail.com, what was the weird advice somebody gave you while you were out traveling that somehow was relevant to the rest of your life? Did you need to put linseed oil on yourself? Was it just making little fists with your feet? We want to know. We can try them out. Maybe that'll get us into exciting adventures.
Nobody's ever met the Grease Man in person. He's just a cryptid.
Look, maybe the Grease Man will send us a message.
It's possible.
In the grease?
I mean, probably.
It's grease mail, John. It's Gmail.
Oh.
What do you think the G stands for?
I thought it was Google.
Google wasn't invented back then. Google didn't happen until 1998.
Okay, can't